Here we are with Congressman Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont, at large, in office since 2007. Great guy, and always speaks in complete sentences, tells us what he thinks, doesn't fool around. So let's go back to the presidential election. There's been a lot of talk about whether Bernie Sanders, who you know so well because he's in the Senate from your state, whether Bernie Sanders ever meant to win or whether he was just there to philosophically get into it.
You know, I think when you start out on something like the presidential campaign, you don't know what to expect. I was seeing Bernie in the airport a lot when he was weighing his decision, and he was wrestling with it. And part of it is, one, he had confidence in his message about income inequality, about the political system being rigged, about too much money in politics. But on the other hand, running for president really is a big deal, yeah. And you're stepping off into the wild blue yonder. You just don't know whether anything is going to work out, and you have to make that decision. And I know that when he was first discussing it internally, he wanted to make certain that if he did run, he'd have a credible race. So I think when he began, he was hoping for credibility, and obviously as he went along, he saw that he actually had a shot at it. I mean, that victory in New Hampshire was a smashing win for him, and then he won that Michigan primary that was considered to be one of the greatest upsets in defiance of polling in recent memory. He just had a great weekend out west. So his view about his prospects, I'm sure, have changed dramatically from when he began to now, and he's got a shot. He's a realistic person, and he knows that right now, delegate-wise, Hillary Clinton is ahead, and he's got a challenge ahead. But he's in it.
So I wanted to ask you something. The assumption is that the Senate may be up for grabs. The Republicans are defending a lot more seats than the Democrats have to defend. Some of them are very close. The Republican Party seems to be at great odds with itself, as we say, circular firing squad right now. So let's assume that the Senate could go Democratic, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now I have the big question for you. You're in the House, and everybody said, nah, the House too many seats. But when you see the Supreme Court thing playing out as it is right now, you see the fighting between Trump and Cruz, you see the Republican Party basically saying to its people, we're not sure whether you should even vote for Trump if he gets the campaign nod. And there are those people who think that no matter what happens, they're not going to give it to him. And if it comes up to the convention, they're going to change the rules. Okay, so let's assume all of that happens. My speech is over. Can the House be taken?
Yes, under those circumstances, it definitely could. I mean, it's chaos on the Republican side. As you mentioned, people don't like Trump, and they're really actively trying to stop him. That's going to create a lot of bitterness among the majority of voters on the Republican side who do want Trump. So there's a fight between the elite Republicans and a lot of the Republican base. Second, their backup candidate is Ted Cruz, and keep in mind, he's not a popular guy. He's the guy that Lindsey Graham said that if a senator shot him on the Senate floor and the Senate was the jury, you couldn't convict. So that's the choice they have between the guy they're all united wanting to stop and the guy that they can't stand. And what that means is that you'll have just a real fracture on the Republican side, and I think that'll affect turnout. And it also may affect turnout and depress it on the Republican side. It may increase turnout on our side. So that kind of scenario creates the opportunity where the House may do the stunning thing and flip to become a Democratic House.
Now, we've all been told that because in a crucial time, state legislatures began to be controlled by the Republicans, that they would gerrymander, which they do in the House, and that's why they're in command. So let's assume that the presidential election brings out a lot of Democrats and the House goes Democratic. Could they keep it?
We could. You're right about the gerrymandering, by the way, because, you know, the gerrymandering was so effective that I think that election in 2010 when we lost the House, we actually got more votes than the Democrats across the country got more votes than the Republican candidates, yet we lost the House because of that gerrymandering. By the way, I think gerrymandering is a huge problem for our democracy, and it's because when you've got these super gerrymandered districts, it's not only unfair to the voters, but it means that if it's a super Republican district or, frankly, a super Democratic district, the members who get elected are focusing solely on the most extreme wing of their party. You saw that with Eric Cantor. I mean, he was very conservative, very solid legislator, majority leader, yet he got defeated in a primary because Eric Cantor was, quote, not conservative enough on immigration. So it creates a lot of fear among members that they've got to appease the extreme wing of their party. And I'd like us to get rid of gerrymandering in congressional seats, and we could do that if we had impartial commissions setting the district lines rather than having a state house politicians who are doing it for their own benefit as opposed to the good of the voters.
That's right. And then the question is, can the Supreme Court of the United States make a difference in this? So years and years and years ago, I'm old enough to know, you know, Felix Frankfurter came in and said that the court should stay out of the political thicket, not get involved in gerrymandering, which, except in the case of minority rights, they have pretty well done. But maybe it's time for a change on the court. And if an extra Supreme Court justice or two get on to the semi-independent line, maybe they'll say this is not constitutional.
Well, what the court can't get involved in drawing the lines. That it definitely, I agree with Felix Frankfurter on that. But the court can get into the business of assessing whether there is a racial component or a voter denial, an abridgment of the right of voters in the way state houses have drawn lines. So there's limits to what I think a legislature can do, even in gerrymandering, and that's up to the court to decide. But bottom line, we've got two big problems that are really impediments to good governance. One is the incredible amount of money in politics. You know, it makes people feel that they don't have a voice. Bernie is an exception to that, obviously, with his small donor base, and frankly, Donald Trump with his self-funding. But you should have people feeling that the money is not what's ruling what's going on in D.C. And the second is the gerrymandering, where it is that all those districts are designed largely for the benefit of the politicians. And it can be Republican or Democrat, but not for the voters. And, you know, I have a lot of colleagues who are in these bizarre districts that snake from one end of the state to the other. And there's no rational community of interest that allows them to develop a relationship with the people they represent. I mean, that's the luxury that somebody like me has representing a state in Vermont where there's one of us, and I have a responsibility to listen carefully to people who voted against me as well as people who voted for me. I have an obligation to represent everybody.
That speaks to your character, Peter Welch. That's all I got to say. I want to ask you whether or not you are keeping an eye on the way in which our water supply, and we only have 2 minutes to, or less than 2 minutes to do this, is got to be made pure again. We're really suffering from this.
Our water supply, yes. I mean, there's incredible problems. We're lucky in Vermont. We don't right now have an issue about access to clean water. What we have is a challenge with Lake Champlain and some of our lakes with phosphorus runoff, yeah, and other pollutants in it. That's a big challenge, but climate change is clearly a factor in the droughts that in the West and the wild weather, including wicked rainstorms. So yes, the quality of our water is affected by, I think, climate change in our practices.
And we know, Peter, don't we, that one day we'll be walking by that lake and we'll see, you know, unfortunately, poor Champy floating on the top of the water, you know.
Oh, that's scary.
Expired.
That's scary. No, those algae blooms are just a real threat. They're awful for the folks who've got these nice camps right along the water, and it's not just their land values go down or their property values decline. They just really can't enjoy the lake. And by the way, that's not just a Lake Champlain issue. You know, that's happening in the Great Lakes as well.
Sure.
And we've got to really get to the bottom of it and address that.
Well, we thank you for coming by, Peter Welch. We know how demanding your time is, and we really appreciate it because when we talk to you, we always learn something. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much.